SouthwestEight.org.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Hour number two of the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. We have two co-hosts for the price of one. Nick Redfern, author of The NASA Conspiracies, Busy Little Bee, coming up with another great book. Chris O'Brien is our co-host. Chris has taken huge numbers of notes about this book. And we want to go through some of that for possibly this hour, emphasize all the questions you have, and then maybe on a little bit later we have a few questions from our forums we'll ask. Chris?
Some good ones, yeah. Okay.
Chris is working for Ben. That's why he's taking so many notes.
Oh. No, I'm fascinated by some of the stuff that's in this book. And one of the things, we're talking about the Challenger, space shuttles, the Challenger and the Columbia and stuff. And there's a really interesting story in here that evidently in 83, Carl Sagan received a really interesting, mysterious handwritten note that had some pretty interesting predictions in it that included the crash of the explosion of the Columbia space space shuttle. And you want to talk about that? The name M. Springfield just in itself is very suggestive. Of course, the same name as Leonard Springfield. But why don't you address that a little bit? Because that's a really interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I often do, when I'm investigating government involvement in different things, is to use the Freedom of Information Act to try and secure files from government agencies. And one of the things that sort of really surprised me was that when I actually found out a couple of years ago that the FBI had been involved in an investigation that suggested that maybe the first space shuttle disaster Challenger when it exploded in 86 and killed all the crew on takeoff, that the FBI had deeply investigated the case because there were a lot of rumors floating around about was it sabotage or not. So I filed a request with the FBI to get hold of this file, and I got an extensive file about 2 inches thick that talks about all the different conspiracy theories surrounding both the 1986 explosion and Columbia's destruction in 2003. But also it referenced this weird story concerning Carl Sagan. Of course, was one of the formative people, I suppose, who sort of blended, mainstream science for the popular culture. He did it in a very skillful way where the average person on the street, could understand, appreciate, and also be entertained by, sort of scientific issues. And one of the things that was contained in the file was this letter that had been sent by some mysterious person named M. Springfield to Sagan in 1983 that made all sorts of prophecies about the Columbia space shuttle getting destroyed, which ultimately it did. Also like a third world war breaking out, but which, didn't, or at least hasn't happened yet, unless you consider, we're in the third world war with the war on terror, but actually made a number of intriguing statements, that Columbia would be destroyed, which eventually it was. It exploded in 2003 over Texas. Also talked about how Poland would be free by 1990, which it was, with the whole perestroika and, breaking away from the former Soviet Union, etc. And very, very weird letter, to the extent that Sagan contacted the FBI, who made a number of inquiries, couldn't track down who this Springfield person was. But it was very much sort of an apocalyptic communication that was sent to Sagan, warning about the destruction of the space shuttle, the end of civilization, nuclear war, etc. And by all accounts, it was taken very seriously by the FBI because it was suggesting that one of NASA's space shuttles would be destroyed. And ironically, almost 20 years to the day, the Columbia space shuttle was destroyed, just as the person had claimed in this particular letter.
So what do you think of that, Gene?
These letters always seem to come up after the fact. They turn up, but before the fact, we don't see the predictions. Very few ever come true.
That's right. I mean, this is one of the intriguing areas, you know, not just talking about the space shuttle, but Poland being, you know, free of the Soviet Union. Who would have thought in 83 that there wouldn't be a Soviet Union, or that, you know, Poland wouldn't be under sort of the grip of the Kremlin or whatever? Now, certainly there were some predictions that didn't come true. I mean, one was made that New York and San Francisco would sort of literally collapse into the oceans, and a third world war would begin in 1998. And also the idea that the world would be poisoned by some sort of weird virus. Well, that didn't happen. But I mean, is that there's barely a day goes by now that you don't hear on the news, oh, you need an inoculation against this virus, that virus, you know, it's like everybody and his brother's virus. So, you know, there were a number of weird sort of precursors in this prediction to certain things that had actually occurred in the last few years. But, I mean, that's just part of the story. I mean, when it comes to the destruction of Challenger, which occurred in January 86, just after takeoff, this is probably the most extensive aspect of the FBI's investigation of space shuttle-based conspiracies. A number of people in the wake of the Challenger destruction in January 86 approached the FBI and said, you know, I was watching it on TV and I saw what looked like a laser-guided weapon hit the fuel tank of the space shuttle. Now, of course, the FBI, you know, inevitably and immediately began investigating these stories. And they weren't coming, the interesting thing is they weren't coming from crazy people. One of them was actually somebody who lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which is where I live, so I've been trying to track the person down, but I haven't found them yet, who actually worked in the video production industry and said, you know, he'd analyzed the footage, slowed it down, blown it up, etc., and had seen what looked like a laser-type weapon or laser guided device hit the fuel tank and explode it. The FBI was so concerned they actually sent agents out to the man's home, not to threaten him or anything like that, but they sat down with him in his living room and watched the footage on his TV, you know, and asked him, you know, can you replay this bit, can you replay that bit, and that's precisely what he did. One of the weirdest stories was a guy who was clearly deluded by the FBI's own admission. You know, he made a number of claims previously that certain space shuttle missions would be sabotaged. But literally 24 hours before Challenger exploded, he phoned his local news station, which was in Florida, and said, you know, that the space shuttle is going to explode on takeoff. And they're like, well, whatever. But they were sufficiently concerned to at least contact the FBI, which they did. And, of course, 24 hours later, the shuttle really did explode. And the FBI were like, well, you know, the guy's crazy, but this time he actually got it right. And certainly the weirdest story of all that the FBI investigated was a case of a woman who said that she'd been contacted by what's actually described in the files as paranormal beings. That's how the FBI describes it. Paranormal beings who almost like channeled, I mean, I do literally mean channeled, information into her head that the space shuttle is going to be destroyed 48 hours from now. And she contacted the FBI, and again, the FBI went out to interview her and said, well, you know, ask questions along the lines of, well, who are these paranormal beings? Where are you getting your information from? And it was, you know, a case of, well, they channel the information to me. And what I find interesting about this particular story is that 24 years later, no less than 28 pages of this particular investigation into this paranormal angle of the space shuttle explosion, 28 pages of the documentation are still classified in the specific interests of national security.
Wow.
So clearly, you know, there is some weirdness attached to the Challenger accident of 1986, even if some people, you know, go with the idea that it was all just a tragic accident.
We'll get into more of the Challenger accident and a lot more. Our co-host, Nick Redfern, is author of The NASA Conspiracies. Our other co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in...
Where are we? Although, yeah, the Paracast, that's right.
Nick, you do that so well, man.
Hi, this is Tamar from Namecheap. We're a domain name and web hosting company, and we really care about our customers. With domain name purchases, Namecheap offers free SSL and free WhoisGuard for a year to protect your identity from spammers. Most importantly, we care about you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit us at radio.namecheap.com, radio.namecheap.com for web hosting and domain name specials. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Namecheap or become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/Namecheap. See you online.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
If you own a septic system or if you're facing costly septic system replacement, this message is for you. When you want to stop paying for pump outs and avoid backups, when you've had enough of the foul odors and costly repairs, use BioSafe One Septic Solution. Now there's an easy to use 100% guaranteed answer to all your septic system problems. BioSafe One Septic Solution. BioSafe One is patented and made specifically for all septic systems and made by the same team of scientists who helped clean up the Exxon Valdez oil spill. BioSafe One decontaminates and removes sludge. Stops costly pump outs and repairs and removes septic system stench, all with a 100% success rate. See what gives BioSafe One Septic Solution the advantage over any other septic product at BioSafeOne.com. That's BioSafeOne.com. BioSafeOne.com. Or call toll free 1-866-424-6663. That's 1-866-424-6663. BioSafe One, the guaranteed bio-friendly, money-saving way to clean your septic system.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct. Wholesale pricing.
On air, online, and on demand, we are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
You're in the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. We're talking about the NASA conspiracies by Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien has been asking some very pointed questions. Let's pursue.
Nick, another thing that comes up from time to time in my research is some pretty interesting events that have occurred down in South America over the years pertaining to what appear on the surface to be some sort of either atmospheric anomalies or if you want to get conspiratorial about it, the crash of alien saucers or alien technology. Of course, Vahinia springs to mind, and there was mention at the time of the Vahinia incident that NASA personnel were somehow summoned to the Vahinia site, and then also there was a, I think, a crash in Bolivia that you talk about in your book. What is NASA's role, do you think, in terms of assisting other militaries around the world, other governments, for events like this? There seems to be some sort of indication that NASA is involved in a sort of transnational fashion. Do you want to discuss that?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question and good issue. I mean, you know, the thing is with NASA, of course, if UFOs are nuts and bolts craft, and some of them have crashed to Earth, you know, obviously it's a controversial issue, but if this has taken place, then NASA obviously is one of the agencies, like NORAD, for example, that is at the forefront of tracking what's going on in the atmosphere or in near-Earth orbit or, you know, outer space, etc. Now, of course, you know, NASA doesn't just track its own space satellites and spacecrafts. It's also, you know, involved in tracking the spacecraft and space satellites of foreign nations. You know, you look at the Russians and the Chinese or whoever. You know, we know that they send up, as we do, space satellites that are, whose sole role, if you like, is to spy on foreign nations. You know, spy satellites with extensive recording equipment, you know, cameras, etc. And for that reason, you know, NASA has its eyes on the skies at all times. If, for example, one particular agency says, you know, we've had a report of something crashing to the ground, it looks like some sort of spacecraft, we don't know what it is. Is it one of yours? And NASA says, well, it's not ours. And then the Air Force, whoever, says, well, have you tracked any sort of Russian craft re-entering the atmosphere? And they say no. Well, then it's like that takes the whole controversy to a completely different level. So, well, what is it? And, you know, I think this is an important issue to remember or to focus upon, the idea that NASA are often very much consulted and questioned by the intelligence community because they're the ideal people to, you know, say, oh, well, yeah, it was one of our craft that went out of control, and if it wasn't, then, you know, we need to find out what it was. And this is certainly the case with this incident that you mentioned in Bolivia. This is a very strange story, but it's a significant one because, again, it was a case that I was able to secure official documentation from, from NASA. And basically occurred in May 1978 when some sort of object was reported in the Bolivian media as having crashed in a remote part of Bolivia on a hillside. And it was described as like an egg-shaped object. Not actually a large one, but somewhere in the region of 12 to 15 feet. Some people said in length, other people said in diameter. So we're not really sure of the shape, but, you know, the reference to a diameter almost makes it sound like a saucer-shaped object. Essentially, what happened was that the story started doing the rounds. It actually even reached the eyes and ears of UPI, and, you know, stories were put out on the news circuits, etc. And I actually got hold of a whole variety of files on this from NASA, which talk about this object coming down on this remote area of hillside in Bolivia in May 78, and NASA answering questions from the CIA. You know, the CIA were asking, you know, is it a satellite? Is it a false alarm? And NASA was saying, well, it's nothing of ours, and we've not tracked anything Russian coming down. And then the rumors started circulating that personnel were sent from NASA to Bolivia to check out the area, and that they may actually have even been deceived by the Bolivian government, that the Bolivian government may have wanted to recover this object for themselves and keep NASA out of the loop, and by default the entire US government out of the loop, which actually may have happened. It's sort of a bit of a grey area, so to speak. But certainly the documentation from the CIA and NASA does talk about some sort of object coming down, even about impact markings on the ground where it looks like something hit the ground and slid down the side of the hill, but also with no evidence at all that this was a terrestrial craft. Now, of course, the documents only tell part of the story. The issue of NASA personnel going out there and secretly being asked to evaluate the nature of this craft That comes from sources like Leonard Stringfield, who said he'd been told certain data by various whistleblowers. This is an intriguing case. You know, in some cases, you could argue it's more important than Roswell, because we actually have official documentation talking about the recovery of a craft that no one could identify. But then, you know, you enter this sort of black hole of where everybody denies it and everybody kind of just goes home as well. Well, we didn't find anything. And, you know, that's one of the frustrating things we faced with. But certainly the case itself was a very, very intriguing one.
Another one that NASA personnel were, I guess, by inference implicated was the Varginha incident in 96.
Yeah.
In Brazil. And did you do any research on that particular one? Because there were claims that NASA personnel were involved in the, somehow in the autopsy of the creatures that supposedly took place at the hospital. And there was also the possibility that the NASA personnel have been involved in other sort of landings or crash retrieval type operations. Have you been able to ascertain the extent of their involvement in other cases?
Yeah, I mean, I did look into the whole Varginha case and whatever. The only reason I didn't mention that in the book was specifically because I just could not add anything new to it. I always feel it's important, if I'm going to write a book, that I don't just want to rehash, you know, old material. I want to try and bring something new to the table. But
right.
Certainly in terms of crashed UFO stories in general, I mean, there are a lot of intriguing stories involving NASA. I mean, one of them, the most famous one, I suppose, is the Keksberg story of 1965, where
right.
some sort of object came down outside of Keksberg, Pennsylvania, December 65. So for almost, I think it's actually like 45 years ago this week or last week, something like that. And the story is that some sort of object was seen sort of flaming across the skies and actually altered its trajectory, which, of course, something like a meteorite simply cannot do, and crashed in woods just outside of Keksberg. And being a relatively small, you know, community, that rumor soon spread around town that something had come down and that there was a huge military cordon and that NASA and the Air Force were there, you know, keeping people away from the area. There were stories of members of the public who'd secretly managed to get through the woods seeing like a Volkswagen car-sized object that was sort of acorn-shaped that was allegedly loaded aboard like a military transport vehicle and, you know, taken to destinations who knows where.
I'll tell you what we'll get into more of. The Keksberg incident, of course, we've had Stan Gordon on the PowerCast a couple of times because he's been so closely connected with the research. We have Nick Redfern, author of The NASA Conspiracies. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in.
I think we're in the PowerCast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The food storage industry leader has done it again. Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it, now you can. Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go. Now you can build food storage without going into debt. Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month. Our clubs work with everyone's budget. Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have Chris O'Brien, who's trying to figure out whether we are or are not in the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg, your genial sometimes host. Chris O'Brien has been asking questions of Nick Redfern, our other co-host, who's author of The NASA Conspiracies. Let me interrupt very briefly, though, Nick, about Kecksburg. Is it all possible that was just maybe a secret weapon or a secret aircraft, not something that was weird?
Yeah, I mean, a number of people suggested. I mean, one of the initial theories was the idea that it was a Soviet space probe or space vehicle. And there's actually no doubt that a Soviet space vehicle did actually re-enter the atmosphere on that very same day as the Kecksburg incident, but apparently crashed over Canada or broke up over Canada. But even though NASA today say that Kecksburg has nothing to do with that incident, it is kind of unusual that of all the dates when something could have come down in Kecksburg, it was the exact same date that something Soviet did actually burn, a spacecraft did actually burn up in the atmosphere and come down. Now, you know, people have suggested that the object they saw wasn't just debris or wreckage, it was like some sort of fairly intact vehicle. You would imagine that if something had plummeted from near-Earth orbit and suffered the sort of rigors of going through the atmosphere and slamming into the ground, it would hardly be an intact acorn-shaped Volkswagen-type vehicle. You know, you'd imagine it would be just pummeled and destroyed. But that wasn't the case. And people did say they saw, you know, the object alter its trajectory and direction, which, again, you know, there's no way that any sort of object plowing through the atmosphere can do that. Because you had these various anomalies, a few years ago, a dedicated researcher named Leslie Keen, who was sort of deeply aware and had investigated all the many and varied complexities of Kecksburg, actually brought suit against NASA, which is, you know, almost unheard of, to try and prize open NASA's files on Kecksburg. And what NASA actually said was kind of interesting. You know, they didn't deny having files, and they actually did release 30 or 40 pages, which didn't really, you know, answer any deep questions as such. They were just sort of fairly innocuous documentation. But what was more interesting, the more Leslie pressed, she found that, you know, certain files that should be existing or that should be available, NASA couldn't find. you know, and it's kind of like the thing we see with the Air Force and Roswell. Well, we went looking, and we think it was probably a Mogul balloon and crash test dummies, but we actually couldn't find any files, you know, and that's what NASA is saying. It's like, okay, you know, we don't deny that certain files should have existed on various issues that might conceivably be related to Keksberg, but we couldn't find them. You know, and it's almost like a damage control where agencies don't want to deny the existence of something, presumably because it might surface later on and make them look bad. So they say, we will search and we cannot find it. Now, a lot of people presume that means, well, there's nothing to find, but it's almost like a very cleverly worded thing. You say, well, we couldn't find anything, but by definition, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist or some other arm of NASA isn't hiding it. It just simply means that the people who did the search potentially aren't cleared to know what was going on. I think that does apply to Keksberg.
Well, when it comes to crash retrievals and that sort of thing, Keksberg, I think, is a classic case because we do have eyewitnesses, a lot of eyewitnesses. We do have some documentation. Something obviously did happen there. Of course, Dan Gordon, as Gene mentioned, has looked into that extensively. In fact, that was his very first case as an investigator. What are some of the other examples that we have? For instance, you have a chapter in there about European sightings during the 60s and 70s. What sort of involvement did you find that NASA had in those instances?
Yeah, this is actually really weird. I mean, one of the things I found was that NASA were being briefed regularly in the period 1973 to 74 on a literally massive scale of UFO activity that was taking place in Spain. Now, this is sort of very much like sort of the old school stuff we get in the early 50s with UFO landings, aliens taking soil samples, you know, vehicle interference cases with engines stalling on cars, etc., etc. A massive wave of sightings from the early part of 73 right through to late 1974. The sort of thing we don't really see today, but that we did see, you know, in the classic waves in the US, as I said, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. What I found particularly intriguing, you know, is that all these cases of like vehicle interference where somebody's driving down the road late at night in their car, you know, the lights go out, the engine fails, this craft comes down and these entities come towards the vehicle, the person has missing time, etc. Or, you know, somebody just sees these weird little figures kind of scooping up dirt from the side of the road, or things that you would expect to see in like a Donald Kehoe book of the 50s or whatever. Not only were they happening in Spain in the early 70s, but NASA was being fully briefed on all these incidents. And of course, you know, you have to ask the question, why would NASA be so interested in ground-based sightings of UFOs in Spain for an agency whose role predominantly is the realm of outer space? You know, I could understand that NASA would be interested in astronaut sightings and things like that, but the very notion of, you know, not even American sightings, but sightings in Spain, it sort of begs the question, is there some sort of clandestine group within NASA that not only takes note of outer space issues relative to UFOs and alien life, but actually what's going on down here as well? And, I think that's a possibility. I mean, some of these reports are from Spain are sort of really, really weird. I mean, you know, the sort of thing, literally sound like something out of the X-Files, you know, some of these cars stopped on the road and these 7-foot-tall, long-haired aliens stride out of the craft towards their vehicle and the guy hits the accelerator, spins the wheels and heads off into the fast lane while these aliens are stuck on the side, you know, on the hard shoulder of the highway or whatever.
Right. Getting the flower samples and dirt samples.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this the same time period when they had the case of the aliens that were supposedly living in the cave and they were buying milk with gold? Or was that earlier? Some of these Spanish cases kind of get jumbled up in my brain because there's so many strange ones.
Yeah, I think the NASA stuff was actually later. Roughly the same period. But, I mean, I know from, you know, recollection that I think they, from early 73 to late 74, NASA compiled something like 70 or 80 reports from Spain alone of, you know, profound close encounters. Not lights in the sky, but people, you know, literally feeling their lives were in jeopardy by the close proximity of either these beings or these craft.
Yeah. I've got a few questions here from the forum that I'd like to toss at you. The first, it's actually about three questions, but they all basically kind of refer to the same sort of subject, and that is the actual formation of NASA. The question is, what is the historical makeup of NASA regarding groups which formed the institution, and who actually ran the early formation of NASA from 47 to 53?
Yeah, well, that's actually a very good question. I mean, what we really have to look at is the fact that in October 1957, the Soviets launched Sputnik, you know, which really, at the height of the Cold War, this really did panic, you know, the Western world, and particularly the United States, you know, the idea that, wow, we've actually been trumped in right. the race of space.
And then Lake of the Dog, yeah.
Yeah, then you got Lake of the Dog, who went up just, you know, shortly afterwards, and Yuri Gagarin, the first man in space. You know, as I said, the first satellite, the first animal, the first man, were all, you know, done by the Russians. And you can understand this was something that really concerned the United States. But what happened was that, you know, this was when President Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower, was, you know, running the country, and he and his staff, you know, they sort of astutely recognized that the world was changing. You know, the old days of the Second World War, etc., were gone. That the domain of outer space was going to play some sort of significant role in the world's future. And what happened was that prior to NASA, you had an organization called the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, which essentially was a body that was delving into sort of early research into rocketry, etc., in the atmosphere, but that ultimately, you know, would go beyond the atmosphere. The idea was that, well, you know, the Russians have done this and they've done that. We really need to have an equivalent agency that can really play a forceful role in outer space. What happened was that by the early months of 1958, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, NACA as it was known, was really sort of digging deep into how some sort of agency could run the banner, if you like, or fly the flag of outer space research. And in April 58, Eisenhower actually stood before Congress and announced the establishment of what originally was known as the National Aeronautical and Space Agency.
We have Nick Redfern, the books, The NASA Conspiracies. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
There you go.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. Day complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at goberkey.com. That's goberkey.com today.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait,
There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
After my second heart attack, I knew I needed more help than I had. That's when Extendivite came into my life. Made from garlic, cayenne, and five other herbs, I started to feel better in a very short time. My name's Don Wiskin, and I'm here because of Extendivite.
Extendivite gave me more energy than I've had in years. I am the only one in my house right now that's not sick from colds or flus. And I owe that all to Extendivite. My name is Rick, and I'm healthy because of Extendivite. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit the website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. Extend your life with
Extendivite. Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
We have Nick Redfern. The book is The NASA Conspiracies, and we're exploring the conspiracies and UFOs and all sorts of great information here. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberger in the PowerCast. What Chris has been doing and will do during this segment of the PowerCast is to continue to go over questions from our listeners. So here we go, Chris.
Okay. Here's an interesting one, Nick. I think you'll like this. We kind of sort of touched on this subject a little bit earlier, but the question is, and first it starts out with an observation. It seems that over the years, NASA's scope has greatly diminished. For those of us who have grown up with the idea that one of the greatest achievements of humankind has been manned space exploration, the agency's acronym might as well stand for not as satisfying anymore. It seems
I love that. Let's stop right there. Let's quit while we're ahead.
Well, hold on. It seems as if the agency's greatest achievements have been from the last century. So with that in mind, here's the question. Do you see NASA as being the powerful clandestine organization that it once was, or has it perhaps become so powerfully clandestine that it's actually doing all sorts of amazing things while giving us the impression that it is practically as useful as a boar's teat?
Well, I'm not entirely sure it's that simplistic, but I mean, I would agree. But I think, you know, when the moon landings occurred, there's a very good argument for saying that it was almost like an anticlimax afterwards.
Right.
And I think the important thing that should have happened, or the most critical thing, was that NASA capitalized on it and said, you know, when Kennedy said in 62 we're going to land a man on the moon before the end of the 60s, we're going to have a manned presence on the moon, permanent presence by the start of the 21st century, and we're going to have astronauts going to Mars by 2020. Had that sort of vision been laid out forcefully, enthusiastically, authoritatively, then I think NASA would be in a very different position to that.
Well, publicly, Nick, I think what the questioner is kind of hinting at here is that NASA is really actually involved in all sorts of things, like a secret space program, if you will. And it's just giving us the impression that there's really nothing going on, that their manned space flight and space travel is all kind of a thing of the past. What sort of credence do you give the whole idea of a secret space program, that we're already on the moon, we're already on Mars, that sort of thing?
Oh, no, I actually think that's a very valid area. I mean, one of the reasons why I think it's valid is that we can draw a parallel with what we know from conventional aviation. For example, when the stealth bomber, you know, this weird-looking big black triangular-shaped thing with the jagged edges was rolled out of the hangar for the public and the media to see in 1989, it had actually been flying for, you know, 10 years before that at prototype stage. So you know, the idea that the space shuttle, 30 years this year on, from, excuse me, next year, but the space shuttle first flew in 81, you know, 30 years on, do we really believe that the space shuttle is still the best that the U.S. military or government or NASA has, you know, given the fact that only 7 years after Kennedy made his speech, we were on the moon. For 30 years, we've not really got much further. I think that's sort of stretching credibility. So I actually don't rule out at all in the slightest, and I actually think there's a great deal of credibility to the notion that there could be a space program running in tandem to the one we... No, you know, it makes sense for the space shuttle to send, to go up and put satellites into orbit, because that's what it does extremely well. But if you want to travel to the, you know, further extremes, etc., you're going to need something else. And I think one of the things that actually ties into this very well is the story of Gary McKinnon.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Gary McKinnon is this computer hacker from England who hacked into NASA in search of information on UFOs and advanced technologies. And one of the things that that McKinnon said he saw on NASA computers that he hacked into were references to reams and reams of names of what looked like military personnel that were all listed under the intriguing title of non-terrestrial officers. Now, you know, this is sort of a very strangely worded phrase, non-terrestrial officers, and, you know, NASA itself has either been totally silent or, you know, chooses to ignore these terminologies, as does the military, the Pentagon, and everybody else. And to me, it doesn't sound, you know, like something that McKinnon would simply spin out of thin air. It sounds like, for all the world, like some sort of, almost like a, you know, an equivalent of an outer space aircraft carrier or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Some sort of crew on some sort of advanced vessel. Now, we can never know for sure, of course, but I think things like this, you know, open us up to the idea that there could be a clandestine space program going on. You know, I address this issue quite seriously in the book, that, you know, there's maybe a systematic study has already been done on the face on Mars. You know, who knows? Perhaps we've made historic space flights to other worlds, you know, in our solar system. Who knows? And we just haven't been told. I suppose the cynical side of me would not find that surprising, you know, that somebody's already gone to Mars and they choose not to tell us about it. You know, that would just be typical.
How do you get a handle on that, you know, a rumor that we've already been to Mars, we have the clandestine space program, all this stuff is going on, this secret, top secret space program? How the heck do you prove it?
Well, that's proving it's a big problem. But, I mean, we do know, for example, you know, that NASA has been working with, you know, on radical spacecraft designs. We know that Area 51, even if you take aliens out of the equation, that at Area 51, there have been clearly some highly advanced prototype aircraft have been developed. We know that. We could argue that at least some, I think, of the so-called Flying Triangle reports are evidence of highly advanced military test platforms, etc. So, you know, it's not that much of a leap to imagine if we're testing these things in our atmosphere that somebody else could be testing more advanced things outside of the atmosphere. And of course, I think if anybody is engaging in a hidden space program, it would have to be to investigate the things that they don't want us to know about, because, you know, if nobody had a problem with it, it would all be in the public domain. So I suspect that if there is this sort of second tier of a space program, it's purely and simply designed to investigate certain issues like the face on Mars, the idea of ancient life on Mars, or even possibly still living life on Mars. You know, I don't actually rule that out. There have been some very weird photographs brought back from Mars that seem to show evidence of vegetation and water, etc., in certain locations. You know, maybe sort of the fact the paradigm challenging issues that these revelations would have that kind of inspires people to say, well, you know, we're going to do it undercover. We're not going to do it via the open space program, if you like.
Well, that also brings up the whole subject of the militarization of space. I remember the wonderful plot element in the quite funny movie Space Cowboys, where these retired astronauts are sent back up into space to fix an old computer system on a huge, massive, you know, nuclear device that has rockets pointed at the Earth in some huge orbiting space station. Where does NASA's involvement publicly end? And then where does that link to the militarization of space sort of start? Have you got any information on, you know, the percentage of launches that are military and secret and not divulged publicly? What is NASA just a public relations agency now for the militarization of space, do you think?
Well, that's actually a very good question. I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, NASA legitimately launches satellites and space probes, you know, into space that are designed to, you know, fly to different planets in our solar system, Saturn, Venus, wherever, to, you know, to try and determine what we can learn from these planets, et cetera, et cetera. But there's also the fact that a highly significant number of, particularly the space shuttle launches, are actually designed to place military satellites into Earth orbit. And most of these are like spy satellites, actually launched on behalf of people like the National Security Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, and the CIA. You know, they put in satellites into orbit that will be able to sort of spy on Russia, on China, on Iran, on Iraq, etc. And this happens all the time. And, you know, this is where you have the public face of NASA involved in scientific exploration versus the private face of NASA actually launching satellites on behalf of the Defense Department and the intelligence community. And, you know, the two issues, ironically, on the one hand, are inextricably linked because it's often the same vehicles launching them, the space shuttles, and the same crews. You know, you often get certain astronauts going up time and time again. And yet the whole modus operandi, if you like, is totally different. On the one hand, it's scientific exploration. On the other hand, it's defense and intelligence-related issues. And I think this is an important issue to remember when it comes to government secrecy.
We'll get into more of that in a moment. We have Nicholas Redfern, author of The NASA Conspiracies. Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.